Welcome back to the show. Thanks again to Saskatoon's Chief of Police, Cam McBride. I noticed a text on the text line from Marv. We were talking about the number of stolen vehicles and evade police calls. So these are when police initiate a traffic stop, they put their emergency equipment on, and the vehicle doesn't stop for police. I'll tell you, not to date myself, but in the early to mid-90s when I started policing, that was so rare. If you had a police, if you had a car that didn't stop for police, it was rare, and often we would then think, okay, well, something is so seriously wrong, we're going to pursue that vehicle and make them stop. Well, now, the number of evades, like we're talking, this is happening multiple times a day in cities, Saskatoon and Regina for sure. So we talked with the chief about it. Marv with a text saying, this is the 21st century. I would think that police would have a firearm that could fire some sort of GPS locator tag onto a fleeing vehicle, and then back off direct pursuit while coordinating units to slowly blockade the perp to effect the traffic stop safely. You're absolutely right. There, that technology does exist. In fact, you can buy the technology that it will shoot it, if you want to use that term, from the vehicle. So it's not an officer with a gun shooting a GPS tag. It actually shoots from the vehicle. I've seen that at various trade shows, you know, through the years. There's all kinds. There's hooks that will fire out and stick into the back of the car. This is taking you back to some of those early cartoons that we used to watch, right? You can do that. There's netting that disables the tires. There's a bunch of things. I think Chief McBride's point is they have a pretty good success rate, even if the vehicle doesn't stop, in combination with the air support unit, which is significant in both Saskatoon and Regina, and other opportunities they have. They don't have a big problem in not being able to eventually catch and hold these offenders accountable. But Marv, to answer your question, you bet that technology does exist. Okay, this is the time of year when I would say holiday traditions meet political accountability, at least according to the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Each December, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation released their annual Naughty and Nice list, highlighting politicians, policies, even public decisions that they say either helps taxpayers or doesn't. So who's getting the lump of coal this year? Scott Moe is on one of these lists. I can tell you that for sure. So we'll find that out. I also wanted to talk about their recent news release talking about the March Madness spending spree. So here to talk about both of those things is Franco Terrazano. Franco is the federal director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, and Franco joins us by phone this morning. Franco, thanks for taking the call.
Hey, no, thanks for having me on.
Great to have you here. Okay, I've got a few things I wanted to chat with you about. I've got a couple of your recent releases. Let's start with March Madness. At the end of November, I know the Canadian Taxpayers Federation came out with a media advisory talking about spending that was happening feverishly in March. Can you talk about the basis of that?
Yeah, well, March Madness, when it applies to the federal government, it's not about NCAA basketball, okay? It's about federal bureaucrats at the end of their budget year looking for ways to burn through cash. So the federal government's budget year ends on March 31st, and this is a well-known phenomenon within the Ottawa bubble, where at the end of the fiscal year, you have these federal bureaucrats looking for ways to burn cash, because what they think is that if they don't spend the extra money, then their budgets will be cut in the following year. So it is a very perverse incentive. It happens essentially every year in Ottawa. And look, this year, or we caught the federal government spending $1.5 billion during a 10-day March Madness spending spree on office supplies, machinery, and equipment. Folks, $1.5 billion in 10 days. And like, I think if you ask most Canadians, would you rather the government build a new hospital or spend money funding bureaucrats 10-day office supply equipment spending spree? I think every single Canadian would choose that hospital.
So, Franco, can I ask, is there a way we can understand a bit of the nuanced breakdown of this? Because I would agree with you, if we're buying, you know, caseloads of pens just to spend the money, that's one thing. But what if it's equipment? Because I know defense spending was in there as well. What if this is equipment that they wanted to see, you know, could they get through the year any unplanned things that might have popped up, but these are things that they actually need. So is there a way we can delineate between the two?
And you know what, Evan, that's a great point, because look, in some cases, if you have to spend the money on a priority, that's okay. All right. You know, we can maybe debate the details here or there, but you know, in a lot of instances, that's not what's going on. It's in a lot of cases, it's the bureaucracy is just looking for ways to spend money. You know, you bring up national defense. That's a good point. They did spend money on like supplies and equipment, but even in national defense, right, within 10 days, they dropped $205,000 on office furniture. Right. But there's even more egregious examples of this, like the CRA spending $50,000 patting its employees on the back with awards. And this is the same year when the Auditor General found that the CRA gives the correct answer to personal tax questions just 17% of the time, yet they're dropping $50,000 in this 10-day March Madness spending spree. You have other departments like Canadian Heritage spending more than $12,000 on awards. You got Via Rail dropping $1.5 million on new Apple iPhones for its staff. You have the Department of Immigration spending 150,000 smackers on office furniture. Even the Privy Council office, which is really the core of the federal bureaucracy, dropping 60 grand on furniture. And Evan, here's the problem, is that we see this happening year after year after year. In the previous two March Madness spending sprees, Global Affairs Canada dropped $527,000 on artwork, including almost $10,000 on Lego blocks.
Yeah, okay, so that's a head scratcher.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. But, you know, even more concerning to me, and I don't know if more concerning is the right way to phrase it, but I noticed in your release that there were multiple agencies and Crown corporations that refused to submit expense information. How is that possible? I thought all tax-paid entities are required to publicly show their ledgers.
Yeah, they should be. And in many cases, even when Crown corporations that take taxpayers' money, like, look, it's a fundamental principle of our democracy and government accountability, is if you spend taxpayers' money, we deserve to see the records. Because how else are we going to hold these politicians or government accountable if we don't know how you're spending our money? So when I said that the federal government dropped $1.5 billion on a 10-day spending spree, you know, that's probably the tip of the iceberg, right? Because you had different agencies like Parks Canada, like the CBC, like Canada Post, like the National Capital Commission, among others, just refusing to disclose the information, you know, just couldn't be bothered.
Franco Terrazano is my guest, federal director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Okay, every year you release the taxpayers' naughty and nice list. I'm looking at the list right now. I already teased this morning that our premier is on one of the lists. I didn't disclose which one. Which would you like to start with, naughty or nice?
Well, you know, maybe let's just start with the Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe, just because you already teased it up. Let's give the people what they want. So Scott Moe, your premier this year, he made the nice list. And let me tell you why. You got to give credit where credit's due. And the Saskatchewan government has been the leading government in Canada fighting the carbon taxers in Ottawa. It all started about a decade ago with then Premier Brad Wall, who was really the only formal premier in Canada fighting carbon taxes. And it continues to this day under Scott Moe. And what Scott Moe did this past year is he essentially set the industrial carbon tax, the hidden carbon tax on business, he set it to zero, right? Making Saskatchewan the only carbon tax-free province in the entire country. And speaking of the nice and naughty list, you know, rumor has it, Santa is thinking about expanding his toy production into northern Saskatchewan to escape the industrial carbon tax.
Okay, I like that. I notice you've got Alberta Premier Danielle Smith also on the taxpayer nice list. Why so?
Yeah, so she's on the nice list. You know, when I was speaking to Santa Claus, you know, the patron saint of children, when he saw that Alberta's kids were out of classrooms for almost a month, and the government teachers union trying to shake down Alberta taxpayers for an extra $2 billion. I mean, Mr. and Mrs. Claus, they think Premier Smith is right. to get kids back into classrooms and to refuse to fork over an extra $2 billion. Now, even after the government's offer, right, Alberta teachers are the highest paid in Western Canada. No provincial sales tax out there in Alberta. So for refusing to spend even $2 billion on top of that, for getting kids back into classrooms, I think Premier Smith in Alberta is worthy to be on Santa's nice list this year.
A couple other quick ones on the nice list that caught my eye. Cape Breton gun owners.
Yeah. Well, hey, Santa doesn't exercise often, but he loves to see people exercise their democratic right to protest a taxpayer boondoggle, folks. Okay. So, Evan, I'm sure your listeners out there in Saskatchewan, they know about the federal government's gun ban and confiscation scheme.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the phone lines.
Yeah, we've talked about it about 1,000 times. That's right.
Yeah. Well, the pilot project was in Cape Breton, and you had hundreds of Cape Bretoners peacefully rally against the federal gun ban and confiscation. The numbers are preliminary, but it looks like the government only took about, 10% of the firearms that they were trying to do. So, like, look, these law-abiding Canadian firearm owners, they did everything right. They played it by the books. And the Cape Bretoners, they were protesting the government's pilot project out there very peacefully. And let me just tell you, Santa agrees with Cape Bretoners, right? The government should protect Canadians from criminals, not Krampus from Mrs. Claus's rifle.
Okay, and very quickly, we're getting short on time, but I noticed also on the list is Hans McCarthy. So he is the First Nations man that essentially was challenging Frog Lake First Nation with showing their books. Can you talk about why he's on the list and why that case was important?
Yeah, and so what Frog Lake Nation, right? That's a First Nation that's in eastern Alberta, so pretty close to Saskatchewan out there. And this Indigenous activist, I mean, his courage, his commitment to government transparency. So he launched a court challenge to force the federal government to release the records relating to Frog Lake First Nations Trust Fund. So the trust fund totaled about $102 million in 2013, but less than $9 million remained by 2024, right? So he filed an access to information request with the federal government. The federal government refused to provide the documents, and then this court challenge was launched. And, you know, to McCarthy's credit and his commitment, he won the challenge, and the court ordered the federal government to provide the records. And it's even bigger than this one individual's actions, because this court case sets a very clear precedent that band members have a right to know how their community's money is being used. So, you know, it was so great to see this outcome, and really, you know, hat off to Mr. McCarthy there, really, for his courage and his commitment.
Okay, Franco, we've got about a minute left. I would like to know the naughty list. Who would you say the highlights are getting a lump of coal in their stocking?
Oh, the top of the naughty list has to be Ontario Premier Doug Ford. It has to this year. He was very busy gifting Ontario politicians with massive pay increases, right? So Ontario's politicians, they gave themselves a 35% raise this year. Ford took a pay raise that would make even Ebenezer Scrooge blush. He gave himself a $73,000 raise. Not just that. You know, they brought back their platinum taxpayer-funded pensions that they had gotten rid of back in the mid-90s, and even more lumps of coal. You know, Ford used to campaign against political welfare in Ontario, but this year he made Ontario's per-vote subsidy to political parties permanent.
It's a lot of alliteration, Franco. I noticed a couple of federal ministers in there, the finance minister, the public safety minister, and the Canada Revenue Agency on your naughty list as well.
Well, Santa reads every single letter he receives. The CRA can't even bother to pick up the phone, right? Like, they left Santa on hold for, nearly an hour. When they finally picked up the phone, they forgot to check their numbers twice, and they gave Santa the wrong tax information, right? And it looks like that's what they're doing to Canadians as well. Auditor General report this year, it was a bombshell, and it found that the CRA only gives the correct answer to personal tax questions just 17% of the time. What a nightmare.
Franco, always love having you on the program. Thanks for checking in. If I don't chat with you before, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Thanks for having me on the show.
Franco Terrazano, the federal director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, and he's also the author of Axing the Tax, The Rise and Fall of Canada's Carbon Tax. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.